Hey everybody, welcome to the Little Monsters Movie Podcast. I'm Dino.
Welcome. I'm Ted.
Yeah. Like you guys don't know who we are by now, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Make sure you know which one's the good looking one.
Yeah, right there, the clown. Anyways, awesome. Today we're going to be doing...
Finally.
The Mask of the Red Death with Vincent Price.
And I'm dying to do a Vincent Price
1964.
Movie. No little kids, no jokes, just straight up death, Satanism.
Well, I still may say a couple jokes here or there.
Oh, yeah, but I'm just saying, no kids in peril. Well, okay, Red Death is kind of a peril. But,
no, this is darker. This is more, you know, like you said, from, satanic, which we'll get into. I mean,
this was one of the, what they call the Poe cycle that Richard Corman
Edgar Allan Poe cycle. And Roger Corman. I mean,
yeah, Roger Corman did 8 films. He produced, directed 8 films. Based on Edgar Allan Poe, and they're not in an order, but there's the House of the Fall of the House of Usher,
right.
Pit and the Pendulum, Tomb of Ligeia, The Raven, Mask of the Red Death,
you know,
there's Tales of Terror, Premature Burial, and there's another one I'm forgetting it.
Yeah, close enough.
It's gonna bother me now. But
yeah, the
doesn't matter. There's another one, and
and he's got his style to his movies too, which you'll notice. But
Mask of the Red Death, I think, was the 8th one that he did, and you know he worked with a lot of the same crew, a lot of the same actors. Vincent Price is in this one. There's only one that Vincent Price isn't in, and that's The Premature Burial, which is still a great film. Vincent Price wasn't in it. There's a little bit of stuff on that. If we ever do it, I'll talk about it.
And there's a lot of movies where Vincent Price is just a very likable guy, no matter if he's bad or good.
Not this one.
He's a very dark, sinister individual, and you know, given it's basically there's Satanists.
Absolutely.
So you know, without that's not giving nothing away, but
and,
you know,
it differs from, as all of these Poe movies do. It differs from the story, and you know, I even refreshed myself on the story before we did the podcast. The story's only a few pages long, so to flesh it out into a...
Right.
Sorry. Normally, Roger Corman used Richard Matheson as the screenwriter on this. He's not on this one, but you might know Richard Matheson. He was a novelist in his own right. They did movies based on his books, Incredible Shrinking Man,
right.
Somewhere in Time, What Dreams May Come, which is like in the last 20 years or something with Robin Williams.
Yes.
But this film starts off with I love the red hooded figure.
Yes, sitting against a tree.
Mm-hmm, he's with tarot cards.
He's just sitting back there, leaning against a tree.
And representative of the Red Death.
Yeah.
And an old woman is walking by with, I think, a bushel of sticks.
That's where the Grim Reaper is, you know, black cloaked, you know, the little...
Kind of like that. I mean, it's representative of death. And
when we get to the end,
there'll be more of them, and it's kind of cool.
Right.
And, you know, he's this old woman, and he gives her a flower, a white rose.
Yes.
And while she's holding it, just turns all red, and she takes it with her, and I think that's symbolic of her bringing the Red Death to the village. And so we're back in the village, and
this is where the evil, mean-hearted,
awesome
Vincent Price just comes in with his soldiers, and
he's Prince Prospero, and that's a character from the story.
Prince
Prospero, the Lord of the Province, and he's riding his wagon, his cart, whatever, horse-drawn carriage through the town.
Yeah. It's not very sinister, really. I mean, it wouldn't be scary looking, but he's got the soldiers behind him, so...
Right, and there's a little baby sitting, like, right there in a row. Someone left their baby.
Yeah, guy just jumps in and...
And picks the child up, and...
And before we get into more detail, it's something about the movie that I'd like to throw out. Just the style of the movie. I mean, of course, it's Roger Corman. He has his own style. Vincent Price, the era in 1964. But this definitely has an era about it of the time period, too.
Mm-hmm.
And... You gotta love the costuming.
Absolutely.
Which, every movie from the 60s that used this style of costuming had the brown felt, spandex type thing, but it's like the felt.
That, so, you know, they never wore. But
oh, yeah, they, you know. Right. So I, for some reason, that just catches my eye every time I see a movie like this. That,
you'd love all the Poe movies because they reused a lot of the same sets. It's all the same costumes.
Well, this, they saved a lot of money because if you look at this movie, it's very expensive looking. Mm-hmm. I mean, lot of expensive and very well.
And it absolutely was not.
No.
Although
they
had
extras from Beckett. Maybe. Or something, a movie like that, okay. Prior to,
this
that
was
they
a,
used, reused.
They did get a little bit of extra money on this movie, because I think they filmed it in England, and something with England, if you had like mostly English workers and stuff like mm-hmm. that, you got like, I don't know, maybe money from England or something
okay.
like that.
Yeah.
So this particular movie did have a little bit of a more budget, but Roger Corman kind of felt like he could have got the same thing done faster. Because they would normally churn these movies out in about 4 weeks. This one, I think, took like an extra week or two.
Yeah.
But, you know, Roger Corman, you know, and Vincent Price, these movies, they got them done quick. You know, they knew each other. They knew what to do. You
yeah.
came in prepared.
Yep.
And you did your stuff. And, you know, for the most part, you know, maybe a couple retakes here and there. Or, you know, maybe hit a snag one or two. But
mm-hmm.
they got these done pretty quick.
But nevertheless, yeah. They're in the village.
Right?
He comes up on them. And
Prospero's...
Scares the living... crap out of all of them, but
you know, he's telling them about, you know, I know you got a particularly good harvest this year and the taxes, and you know, and I think the young fellow comes up and says, you know, yeah, so you won't leave us enough to eat, you'll take everything from us and we'll starve.
Yeah.
And even another older gentleman comes in and he blurts out something too, and he says, you know, tells his guards, you know, execute them, garrote them, he says, where they
right.
tie like the wire around their neck.
Ready to choke them out
and
kill them.
Yeah. Young girl comes and drops down on the ground, and a very pretty girl. Her name's Francesca.
Francesca, so, yeah.
And begs mercy for them. It turns out that the older gentleman's her father, and the other one is her
lover.
Boyfriend, lover.
Well, they say lover.
Yeah, her lover.
Yeah,
the man I love.
The English saying.
And
yeah.
Vincent Price, man, just smooth, silky.
Oh,
says,
he
you know,
is.
You can pick. Pick, one of them has to die, you pick. And before anything can really happen, he hears a scream.
Right.
And he goes into one of the hovels, tents, things that they've got. And
there's an old woman in there.
And the old woman from the beginning. And the way they depict the Red Death, just... blood dripping from the face.
Almost like sweat, but red sweat.
Exactly.
So, which represents the blood and the
right.
Red Death.
And they
so.
Realize the Red Death has come, so he hightails it out of there.
Yeah.
He does take Francesca with him, though, and he takes the other two gentlemen, the other two guys, as prisoner. And
which is strange if he's worried about taking a Red Death with him to the back to the castle.
Yeah,
but
not the smartest thing to do.
No, but that's just one little thing. I mean, it's not
she
worth,
was the only one
worth,
in the village who had it.
Right.
So he locks the other two up, and we're going to find...
But he didn't want the Red Death coming, so he
right.
burns the village. So
yeah, yeah.
He just
village,
says, destroy it all. So
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And basically everyone in it. I mean, there's only a few people left towards the end of the film.
Yeah.
And we're going to find that Vincent Price is a Satanist, and he's
yep.
just really into corrupting innocence.
Oh, yeah.
That's why he took her, because she's so innocent and pure.
Right.
I mean, he takes her back to his place... and immediately, like, throws her in a bathtub of hot water and
oh, yeah.
notices that she has a cross around her neck. And he specifically asks, is that just for decoration or do you really believe?
Right.
And she says that she really believes, and he orders her to take it off and never wear it again.
Yeah, not in this house, he says.
Right. And next to him is, it's not his wife, but it's like his concubine, whatever you call it. Her name is, I can't remember her name in this film, forgive me. But she's played by Hazel...
Juliana, ain't it?
Juliana.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank
Juliana.
You. That's correct. And she's played by Hazel Court, another
right.
really lovely actress.
Mm-hmm.
And she was in a few of these other Poe movies. She was in Premature Burial.
Okay.
And she's even got some cred that goes back to Hammer Films. She was in Curse of Frankenstein, I know for sure.
That cred is short for credentials.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Get with it.
Come on.
But, she's a British actress, very, very lovely. I love yeah. watching her in movies. She's very pretty.
And Francesca's nice.
Yeah,
I mean, and, but you know what? For being a Satanist movie and a you know very, there's no skin in here. I mean, not
yeah,
really.
Not as much as I'd like. That's
you know,
for damn sure.
Nothing really going on. I mean, so if you're looking for,
but,
you know,
he's of course kind of got the, well, big kind of coming up there, and I always liked it. That's always
a little bit of yeah.
Hammer always had that and. I mean, as a young child, and, you know, you kind of, that's, yeah, that's all right. And Then you grow up and you get away from... Well, no, I don't get away from it. I still like it, but I appreciate other things about them. So, you know, there's going to be a little jealousy between these two women.
Right.
Because...
Francesca and Giuliana.
Giuliana wants to be, you know, she's hoping to become, like, the bride of Satan. Right. And,
well, of course, Francesca wants nothing to do with this. She wants to get out of there and get Gino and her father out of there.
Ludovico so, or something.
Yeah, some weird name. Is. Yeah,
her father. But her lover is named Gino.
Right.
G-I-N-O. And so, and also, as they rode into the castle, Vincent Price gave orders for invitations to go out to all the nobility in the nearby village. I think this takes place in Italy. And he wants them all to come to his castle to have
fun, you know, and
days and nights of revelry and to be safe from the plague outside.
Although did he send them there before he went to the village and burned it down? Or
it was after, like when he got back, he sent orders to send everybody and bring them all in.
Okay.
I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
And he threatens them all, you're all safe here, nobody leaves.
Right, and it must have happened really fast, because after she takes a bath, they come down and, like, everyone's there already. I mean, everybody just must have got on their horse.
Yeah! We're getting a Red Death is coming! What?
Another Red Death. And I did notice one of the characters is played by Patrick McNee. He plays this character named Alfredo, and I just remember him from Clockwork Orange. As one of the guys that the droogs go in and they end up like breaking his back and raping his wife.
Oh, but, that's right. I do remember that
He's
scene.
So memorable in that scene in Clockwork Orange. I remember him anywhere.
Right.
And he's in this film. So they're having their
party. I haven't seen that movie in a while, but yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. It's just hardcore. Yeah, just hardcore.
There's so many movies we'd like to go over that isn't real horror, but...
Right.
Know, but we'll...
And maybe we can. You know, we can mix it up.
We'll throw them out there.
Because we already got ideas for other little movies to mix in. But they're going to have their little party, and this is a part that we were talking about before we started the show.
Yeah.
A little dwarf comes out.
Court jester.
Like a court jester type dwarf comes out, and his name in the film is Hoptoad.
Hoptoad.
And a little girl comes out, who we think is a little girl, like a ballerina in the film. Her name's Esmeralda. And Prince Prospero and his friend Alfredo are sitting, and they're watching... And she's doing a little ballet dance.
Yeah, like a little girl would do, dancing around and stuff. And,
mm-hmm.
and that's why, and Alfredo, you know, bends down next to Prince Prospero.
Oh, and isn't this an uncomfortable scene?
It is an uncomfortable scene, mm-hmm. and this was prior to me knowing that, you know.
Right, because we don't know that.
Yeah, because he gets mad at the girl for...
She accidentally knocks over his goblet.
Right.
And he just smacks her to the ground.
Yeah, it's a little girl. He just beats, boom.
Right. Yeah. And
but we come to know, I'm not sure when or where, but this isn't a little girl. This is a woman.
Right, this is a woman who looks like a little girl. And part of the scene that's uncomfortable for me is he's asking Prospero, like, where did you find her? And,
right.
I mean, he's got this kind of lustful kind of eyes for this little,
mm-hmm.
who we think is a child. Well, it's actually played by a child. Esmeralda's played by a little girl.
Yeah.
But later on when she speaks, she realizes she's got a woman's voice. And this, what we were talking about before the podcast, is they actually took, the filmmakers actually took another short story from Edgar Allan Poe called Hop Frog and incorporated that as like a little subplot mm-hmm. in the movie. And I'll kind of point out as the movie goes on where that comes from. But this is a story about the Hop Frog is a story about a dwarf and his little... They're in love.
Right.
That's how this story plays out. That they are in a relationship together. So mm-hmm. when Alfredo knocks her to the ground, you'll find out that he took that to heart.
Yeah.
And he's going to get it.
Yeah.
But you know, even obviously Prince Prospero, Vincent Price realizes that he overstepped and takes another guest's glass of wine, goblet of wine, and throws it in his face.
Oh yes. Oh, Vincent Price in this movie, he just
drips evil.
Oh, not just that, just power too. Like mm-hmm. nobody can touch him. He's just golden. Nothing happens to him.
You know, that's how I feel about him in most films.
I feel like that for myself, that I'm like that in real life.
Yeah, you kind of run your house this way.
Don't you? Yeah.
Take that drum up!
No.
And then he presents Francesca. Giuliana brings Francesca downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And she's all gowned up, looking great.
Yeah.
And he presents her to the court. And you know, he's even boasting, you know, how he just, you know, wants to corrupt her.
And knowing all of this in your mind that it's satanic, and you know, start knowing the storyline and stuff like that, it's very mild compared to, but you keep going back to Eyes Wide Shut. In my head, I am, because they're all dressed up, which they'll do later on when they
the masquerade,
you know, but. You know, he immediately gets them down, squealing like a pig and stuff like that.
Oh, but it's going around to everybody.
That, you know, like orgy type scene. Although none of that happens. And it's mostly revelry and dancing.
But I think that that's what could be implied here. Like, if they were to redo this now, that's probably what would happen.
Right. That's what I'm getting at. I think it is implied that although they just kept it from the movie.
And even in the story, they talk about, you know, debauchery and things like that. And, you know, that's just, you know, the words you use for that kind of stuff. It kind of covers a lot of ground.
Right.
You know, it's partying, it's merrymaking, it's, you know, making out, and people just... It's kind of like one of the precepts of Satanism, do what thou wilt, that is the law.
Exactly.
And, you know, Prospero is just telling, you know, act like a snake or a lizard, and he's just telling people, all these people act like a, you know, he tells the one lady, you know, you're braying like a jackass, be one. And she does, she just gets down there and starts... And
he tells the one husband...
Ride that jackass.
And the wife actually gives a look like, she's pissed.
Yeah.
You know? But yet they're, you know, I mean... Whatever.
And so it just shows the power he's got. He's just, you know, and at first it almost seems like they don't want to do it, but then they do it, and then everyone's laughing and thinking it's so funny. And everyone laughs till it's their turn. And,
right.
So this is kind of just setting the scene of everything. You know, it's just a bunch of people just doing what they want, acting, you know, just enjoying, like, the end of days, you know, just partying like it's on sale for $19.99.
Yeah, they're all just, partying down. He's,
right. But, yeah, I get what you're saying about Eyes Wide Shut. I mean, but Eyes Wide Shut has a whole different thing going on.
No,
but
yeah.
But that kind of scene.
The concept
kind of
what
you...
That's, you know...
Yeah.
When you think of Satanism, you think of, you know, orgies and stuff like that. I mean,
film,
actually, you know, me. I mean,
that film has so many levels.
No.
We'd have to do, like, two podcasts on that. Because there's, like... What's on the surface, and then what's underneath.
Underneath, yeah. Stanley Kubrick, yeah.
Right, so...
I do like in this, the coming scenes here, where he shows his... Is it his bedroom? And then there's...
It's not his bedroom, it's just chambers.
Okay, yeah, but...
Separate chambers throughout
they walk through,
adjoining
like,
chambers.
There's, like, three separate chambers.
Mm-hmm, all different
colors. To get to his...
The
satanic
room. And that's actually something that's in the story, too. They don't... I think in the short story there were seven chambers and each one was a different color and the final one was all draped in black velvet and that was... And that's kind of how it is here. The first chamber's in yellow.
Right, yeah.
And he boasts to Francesca. He's taking her and he's showing her all these rooms.
And it's like almost a vertical, you know, this room looks identical to the next one. Almost that's just a different color.
Yeah.
You know,
he says that his father locked his best friend in here for something.
3 years.
For 3 years, and when he finally released him, he couldn't even stand looking at the sun anymore.
Ugh.
And you find that, you know, his whole family has just been like this, you know, trying to, you know, just find breaking points in people and how to get people to do what you want to do. Torture, absolutely.
Yeah.
They go to the next chamber, and it's all draped in purple. And I mean everything. Like in that yellow room and the purple room, everything. From the candles on down. And then they'll go into another chamber, which I believe is all white.
Right.
And then they find the far chamber, which he doesn't want her to go into yet.
Right.
He hasn't quite gotten her to the point where he'll take her in there yet.
He doesn't want to expose her to that yet.
Yeah, that's his, that's like his little den to Satan there. That's where he does his rituals and his prayers. And as of right now, it's supposed to be Juliana who he's, you know, he takes in there and corrupts.
Yeah, there's a throne up there and a coffin.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
That he lays in.
Because they're
going to
be laying in that later, like in some kind of little hypnotic trance.
Yeah.
He and Juliana. So this is, you know, it's just setting it all up. Like, she's just questioning him, he's answering, and they're just having that quid pro quo back and forth. And
this also reminds me a lot of the sets on the Star Trek, the original series.
Oh, yeah? How so?
Just the style. I mean, costume wise, set wise. You know, when they go to different planets and, you know, you get that.
As long as you're not wearing a red shirt.
Exactly. But anyways, off topic again.
No,
I'm sure a lot of
these studios kind of shared sets and things like
that. And it could just be the time period. I mean, Star Trek was, you know, the 60s there, too. So
well, actually, I think 66 to 68. This film was 64. So. Right,
so close enough. Mm-hmm. I mean, just, you know.
I mean, and I love, like, the scene after he's done talking to Francesca. You just get, like, a little panoramic of the castle.
Where the
pillars and just that whole room there. You just get a good look at it. And there is a lot of detail in these films. Same as Hammer movies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and they did use a lot of these sets. Like, if you watch a bunch of these Poe movies in a row, you'll say, I know that chair.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just good detail. Well,
you take you take a good product and they just kept using it. I mean, you know.
I mean, no point breaking down a whole set again because, hey, you know, we're going to make another movie and we'll just reuse it.
Exactly.
Haunted Palace. That's the other Poe movie.
You gotta be kidding me. He would come up with it about 10 minutes later.
Yeah, yeah.
That's Ted
Which for actually you. Isn't, it's only borrowed, it only borrows a title of a poem by Edgar Allan Poe. It's actually, the movie itself is actually more of a H.P. Lovecraft story. So, okay. But it's a great one, and we'll do it eventually. Yeah. I'd love to do a lot of Vincent Price movies. These are probably my favorites. I remember...
We'll get to them.
Just sitting there on Superhost or Big Chuck and Little John and watching Vincent Price movies.
We should just do an 8-hour podcast of all his movies.
Wouldn't it be awesome?
You know.
And, I mean,
I'd have to get a little bit more comfortable, though, and, you know...
Yeah, I brought maybe a cushion for today, but... This chair's got...
Yeah, just to let you know...
This is what he gives me to sit in.
Ted's been sitting on a very hard little couch here.
For you, I do it. Spring going right up my dupe.
What are you gonna do? Anyways, yeah.
So,
Francesca's very...
She's in her bed.
Yeah,
she
looks very, you know, very nice
like,
in her
when
bed.
When she does get up, like, it's all open, window, it's just all wide open. Like, that Red Death could just blow right in.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
but they make a point that she's got her cross necklace on the side there, and then it disappears, and I think there's just, like, a streak of blood there.
Okay.
If I remember correctly.
I've seen this film several times, but
I just watched it a couple days ago with my daughter, because I let her watch the Satanic movies. And, yeah, she wakes up. Her hair is not even mussed up, but I just love the bedroom. How it's like a balcony and then these billowy curtains, and it's all open up to air. And it's just really cool. It makes you feel like what a real castle would be like.
Oh yeah, the castle is pretty cool. I mean, even from the outside, you know. But like we said, the detail is very cool in this movie. I like it.
Yeah, I think one of my earliest memories of Vincent Price, I think it was Superhost watching Pit and the Pendulum.
Right.
And I just remember that pendulum coming down and it starts to slice the guy.
Yeah.
And you know, I love how if I tell my mother that, you know, my daughter's watching this with me, she freaks out. And I was like, you had no problem sitting me there for hours just because you were doing something else in the room and the TV was my babysitter. And
oh, yeah, we've been over this before. We saw all the gory
It gets me every
stuff.
Time, so that's why I've said it a lot.
I mean, and when we watch, I mean, the movies we're going over, I mean, they're not gory and you know... I would never let my daughter sit down and watch Halloween or Jason or something. I mean, those, you know, out of the question.
I don't even watch Jason.
But, you know what I'm saying. But yeah, she's, so where were we? She's walking around.
This is what I was talking about. Yeah, she gets up with a candle, kind of looking around. I think she heard a noise. She looks and her cross is gone and there's just, it's almost like a bloody cross.
Yeah.
On the ground.
Doesn't she hear Prince Prospero, like, chanting or something?
I think
like
that's
that?
where I was just heard of, some chanting.
Yeah.
And she decides to go explore what the chanting is. And, again, just
walking
through
Prince Prospero
the house.
There's
chanting, all these candles are all lit. Didn't people get worried about fire?
Or
I mean, every candle in the place is lit.
And how long do the candles actually just last?
I don't know. In this film,
they've
about 80,000 years.
Because they've got... back in the day, and if this was true... I mean, you got to have a barn built aside just for wax candles.
Don't you love how all the candles... Like, there's blue, there's green, there's yellow. I mean, I don't even know if they had different color candles back then. Or maybe they were just all white or yellow.
I thought... Yeah,
did they have all these dyed candles?
It's a freaking movie, Ted.
I know. My dad used to have a candle. I wonder if he still has it. He took like an old quart Coke bottle and he just melted like all kinds of candles up until it all just melted. It was all kinds of different colors.
You know what? That was a 70s thing.
Yeah.
A lot of people did.
Oh, you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if he
people
still
did
has
that quite
that.
A bit.
I mean, it was gigantic. There was every color of the rainbow.
Yeah. This movie has got me and Ted to wanting to chant and Yeah, but well, anyways. Oh.
Maybe, you know, Dino's family will come down.
What's going on down there?
You guys
are you worshiping the devil?
The devil is good. Satan is your pal. That's from the Burbs, too.
But she hears the chanting. She goes...
through the chambers.
Through the chambers, those colored chambers. Mm-hmm. And she gets to where she's seeing Juliana. She's kind of just sitting on the throne, kind of like in a hypnotic state.
Yeah. All red.
There's a red light coming through.
Yeah.
Vincent Price is laying in a coffin, mm-hmm. again, presumably in some sort of... hypnotic state.
Yeah.
She goes to touch him, and right when she gets close, the only time my daughter jumped in the movie.
Did she then jump?
He opens his eyes real quick, and she, you know, freaks out and runs out of all of the several of the chambers.
Yeah. Door.
Door. Runs clear back upstairs. Instead of running out of the building, she's not going to do that because her lover and her father are still trapped down in the dungeon. She's got to still figure out a way to get there.
Yeah. And she runs into Alfredo.
Yeah, with a devil mask on. He startles her, and you know he's a perv.
Oh, he's a perv.
Yeah,
Patrick McNee.
He's just got these little. I remember it in Clockwork Orange, and this movie too. He just gets these little tics, these little looks in his face, and just
he's one of those actors. Yeah, yeah. He's got little ways about him.
You'll get something cool out of him if you got him in one of your movies.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I love the next morning too.
Is that when he's falconing?
Yeah, Prince Prospero takes Francesca out there,
explains
and goes over
it.
Yeah,
he even says like the first year or something. I think you sew the bird's eyes shut. Wouldn't that kill it?
Yeah. So that he earns the power over it, and it'll do anything he says. It'll come back, and
he's wearing this really cool. Yeah. Hat.
I really don't think that
billowy thing, Hank's scarf hanging down from it. And
yeah, Vincent Price has quite the hat in this movie.
He must have loved his wardrobe in this film. Like, I get to wear all this? Excellent.
And he wears it the whole movie, don't he? I know the hat. I mean, the hat's there pretty much the rest of the movie in here. But
yeah, he's usually got something on his head, I think.
Whichever, I could be wrong.
Yeah, so he's, palavering with Francesco over here.
Going to show her how the falcon goes in.
Like in the Royal Tenenbaums, I remember.
Yeah, the parakeet goes and flies.
and it's a cool scene. Catches it right in midair. Yeah, that's neat. I'd like to start falconing.
I would. I'd like to...
I live in a suburb.
Sew the eyes up and take control over a falcon.
I think they just put like a little hat over them.
That's what they do.
So they put like, you know...
But because he's so evil and
satanic. I just remember Royal Tenenbaums, you know, fly Mordecai.
That's right. Yes, I remember
But yeah,
that.
If you're satanic, you have to sew that shut. You gotta do that. And then just a little bit of his evil stuff comes out next.
Yeah, a few of the remaining surviving...
Or nobility. This is the nobility. They're a little late.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, they show up a little late. And he's like, you know, I'm not letting you in. You should have been here already because everyone else got here in like 6 seconds. And I'm not letting you in.
And I love how he offers up his wife.
Yeah,
he goes,
he's like,
please.
I know you've always had eyes for my wife here. You can have her. Just let me in because I don't want to catch the Red Death. And cold-blooded gets a crossbow and just right to the guy's throat.
Yeah, he tells him, I've already...
I've already had her.
Yeah, I've already had her, you know. And then he shoots him in the throat and... Yeah, how evil.
And then he just tosses down does he leave her out there? I think he leaves her out there.
You
suffer. I've already had you. And that's the kind of dude that Vincent Price plays in this movie.
Oh, very.
Cold.
Oh, my God. To the heart.
Absolutely.
Which is one, you
I think
know.
He tosses down like a little knife to her to like kill herself with.
Yeah, he tells her, here, take care of
her. And that segues into the dungeon scene where a sword falls on the ground at the same time.
Right.
And the guards are trying to teach Gino and
Ludovico
to how to fight swords because they're going to fight to the death.
Yeah, he wants them to fight each other to death.
For all these nobles upstairs.
But they're not going to. I mean, they don't want to do that, so... Yeah.
They can't play Monopoly or charades or Pictionary or anything like that. They have to have, you know, gladiatorial combat.
Yeah.
And
something similar
and
to Russian roulette will come into play, but yeah.
Russian...
Well, I mean,
guns.
It's knifes, but it was
kind
of...
Oh, yeah,
it was kind of
right.
A Russian roulette,
right.
But we'll get
it
to
is.
That.
Yeah, it is.
When they do have to get together and perform, you know, mm-hmm. who's going to die...
Yeah, so, you know, they're resisting at first, and I think the guard, you know, he cuts up Junior a little bit there. But
Gino gets a little pissed off. And,
right.
But then he starts fighting back.
Vincent Price, you know, cold bastard. He brings Francesca Downer to watch this.
Right.
Yeah. You know, he just gets off on just, you know, all the power that he has and what he can make people do. And
he's a Satanist.
Catches him. You know, Gino gets the better of that one guard. Has the blade right under his chin. And
well, if it wasn't Francesca says something like, he's not a fighter. What are you doing?
Yeah, she showed
him. But he did. Yeah.
Or he showed her.
Well, that'll tell you what rage will do. It'll bring absolutely. That fight out in mm-hmm. you. So,
that's what happened to me a couple of times last week.
Yeah,
so,
in the alleys.
When I had my blade with me.
Well, yeah, around when the bars close, we like to walk down dark alleys.
Yeah, I have like a little samurai sword, and it looks like a walking stick.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just pretend I need it when someone messes
with me. He sets down in the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
And
crouch.
And, yeah, he flies out, and, okay, we won't talk no more of this, okay, so yeah, we're at Gino is he's got that little blood coming down the face.
They cut him up a bit.
You know.
And yeah, they're just getting them ready.
And he's basically saying you guys are going to do this one way or the other.
Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. Know. Absolutely. Yeah. So that's gonna be the entertainment is
and he takes her down through I'm sorry. Yeah, then he takes her down through the cellars down lower where all mm-hmm. the people are tortured and stuff
yes,
like that.
Yes, he's got people just locked up. That you know, just that you getting tortured.
Do you
for
hear
fun.
Him? Do you hear him yelling and screaming?
Doesn't somebody come up to the windows or something like that? I think
can't remember. But anyways, yeah, they're down there.
Horrifying.
Yeah,
fine. This is what he gets.
And this
on.
Is where he explains to her, my family's been doing this for hundreds of years or mm-hmm. generations.
Generations.
You know, so
you know to you know give it up for Satan.
Yeah.
And while they're doing that. Juliana, she's trying to speed things up here.
Pretty symbolic scene, yeah.
Yeah, she's in there in the black chamber into the prayer room, whatever. And
the depths
she's,
of the satanic.
Yeah,
ritual.
She's deep in a ritual. You know, there's like incense going. She's gonna drink a cup of something red. They don't tell us what it is. Let's just say it's blood.
Yeah,
and she's got a like a poker. Heating up,
like
that's going to be a cross.
Like she's going to brand
and
her.
And she does. She
crucifix.
She brands
upside down
inverted cross on her boobie.
Yeah.
And hardcore. She's still good looking, even after she does that. But it's just like right there. And she's, you know, she's preparing herself to be the bride of the devil. And, you know, she wants this. And she's afraid that Francesca's going to get the privilege. So she's going to go
I think that's what made her jump the gun. Because mm-hmm. I think Prince Prospero has said that even Juliana wasn't ready.
Yeah.
Really.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think she ever really wanted to take the leap. I don't know how deep they got in conversation, right. Like when they're in their sheets going, oh, honey, are you ready to take the dive?
Take the dive.
So whatever, I mean, you know. But
So she's doing that, and while that's going down, Mr. Alfredo, Mr. Perv, he's coming through the castle and happens to run into Hop Toad in the movie. And
the little dwarf guy.
We know that there's going to be a masquerade ball.
Right.
Prospero's decreed that there'll be a masquerade at midnight.
Yes.
And because of the Red Death, he forbids anyone to wear the color red.
Yeah.
And that's just one of the little side there. So Toad starts talking to Alfredo about, hey, I've got an idea.
Trying to get plans going where he can get...
Right.
Alfredo can get the power.
Right.
And show his...
Because he knows that he's a little ticked off at Prospero for humiliating him with the wine in the face.
Right.
And for all that. And Hop Toad is just doing this for revenge.
Hop.
He wants his revenge for the way that he humiliated the woman he loves.
Yeah.
Esmeralda.
So you don't really pick up on that, or you kind of do. It's a kind of a three-way thing here going
right.
on.
Right.
So.
Yeah, watching this scene, it doesn't... You don't really get that the dwarf is looking for revenge yet. That's going
to
be coming.
You kind of think
once
that
it happens,
actually
yeah,
trying
know.
To help him out, but then you.
But it makes sense,
right?
And if you have read Hop Frog,
right,
you know already what's going to happen. It's just done to a smaller degree in this film.
Oh, the whole scene.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that comes on later.
From the mystery, yeah.
Okay.
In the short story, what happens is he suggests for Alfredo to wear an orangutan costume, and that he will be the keeper.
Not an orangutan; it's a gorilla.
Is it a? I'm sorry. In the short story, it's orangutans.
Okay.
In the short story, it's
well,
orangutan.
Yeah, you're thinking of the story.
But
okay.
In the short story, it's all of them dress up like that.
Okay.
Okay. And what he does to Alfredo, he does to all of them.
Ah, okay. So in this, he convinces Hop Toad convinces Alfredo to wear a gorilla outfit and come in, you know. He says you'll be the center of attention.
Mm-hmm.
You'll show, you know, you'll show a Prince Prospero, pretty much.
Right.
And, that's what happens. And
he's slick. He's a cool actor.
He is. I was going to say the only very other small-statured man is the guy in the Game of Thrones.
Oh, is it Peter Dinklage?
Yeah, Pinker. He's a great actor. And this guy,
the season finale today. Oh, it's just.
I haven't seen it yet, so
I'm not gonna spoil. But, I would never spoil, but he is definitely one of the best things about that show.
Yeah, in this movie, this guy's a pretty darn good actor.
Yeah,
he comes across
a lot of, you know, you come across a lot of, you know, smaller people that have been in films and they're really good actors.
Yeah, most of them don't get a chance because,
right?
You know, what are you going to put them in a leading role? I mean, you know, there's limitations.
When they were first talking about doing like Lord of the Rings, when they were talking about using all like dwarfs for The Hobbits. And I remember hearing like Sean Connery would have been
right.
It was just, oh, it would have been an awful movie. Just awful.
No. Yeah.
It had been like Wizard of Oz or something like that. Extended scene. But,
boy.
I know.
Yeah.
But I know what's going to come up is Juliana's going to bust into Francesca's room. They're going to have words out. You know, she's got her.
And Francesca's kind of nice to her, though, in a way, too.
She's nice to Prospero, considering everything that he's done. Yeah. You know, he continues to try to, you know, corrupt her. Just, you know, and y'all, I think even at the end, she even gives him like a little kiss there, you know, towards the end before the end of the film.
Huh.
But, we're going to come up on. Yeah. And then the short story.
I like Juliana. I like Francesca.
Yeah. Yeah. If I had to pick, I'd go with Juliana. If I had Francesca. To pick one. Yeah. She's a little. I think she's a little bit more proper. You decide for yourself. Let us know in comments what you think.
Team Francesca or Team Juliana?
I mean, come on. A chick that's going to burn an inverted cross on her. I mean, she's probably going to be more dedicated. Let's just put it that way.
Oh, boy.
It takes dedication to do that.
This room's just all open, too, her bedroom.
Everything's all billowy. And
yeah, I mean, it's wind's blowing through. I think it's just, there's no windows or nothing. It's just all coming right through there.
I know.
Nowadays, you'd have black mold growing on
there. Mosquitoes, bugs. Because I think there's, like, swamp out there. All the marsh flies and things like, don't even get me started. So, but yeah, this is kind of like the short story. There's going
to
be a master
She came up to the room, though, to tell her...
She gives her the key.
That she can escape, and that she's bought off a couple of the guards or whatever or something.
She'll be able to... She's got the key, and she'll be able to...
So she's trying to help get Juliana and the two guys out.
Right, she wants them out because she wants the power.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's what this all comes down to. You're getting all these people that just want the power, and that's the failure of the film there. So,
yeah
she's going to be able to kind of bust them loose a little bit, but it ain't going to go so hot.
Yeah, never does.
No. And much like the story, you know, all of this is just, you know, made up for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But just like in the story, there's going to be a big masquerade, debauchery and everything to follow. You got to have a masquerade.
Yeah, well, of course,
masquerade party one time. I think I won the contest. I was a escaped mental patient. I had a hospital gown and a depend on.
Yeah.
I have a depend on now.
Just a Halloween party, you know.
I know.
You got to love it.
Depends are awesome.
Depends.
I don't know. You sit there and just cut loose your pants. This is nice.
We might as well talk some bad stuff if we're talking a satanic movie.
I know.
I just sit around and poop in my Depends. Why not?
Anyway,
she heads down there to go to go get Gino and her father.
Right, and she's passing by all these cells with these poor tortured souls.
Yeah, no, they're not real loud, but they got looks on their face.
Yeah,
like they're you know,
insane.
They're in pain, but
There's another film that Vincent Price does where he tortures people. You ever see Witchfinder General?
I haven't seen many. Believe it or not, I've seen Vincent Price movies, but I haven't seen too many of the Edgar Allan Poe ones.
This one
is also
called Conqueror Worm, which is an Edgar Allan Poe poem. But this Witchfinder General is not based on Edgar Allan Poe's story.
Okay.
But he plays an Inquisition kind of torturer whose expertise is torturing people. That's a hardcore film, too.
Okay.
And maybe it's one that we could do later on. Not for kids, but it's a good movie. It's one of the more popular ones that he's done just because he plays probably the worst, most despicable character that he's ever played is probably in that movie. Worse than this one.
And what year was that? You know?
That was later. That was maybe, 70. If it wasn't late 70s, I think that one was in the early 70s.
Okay,
maybe,
okay.
Maybe late 60s, but nothing much later than the 70s.
Have to
sure.
check that one out too, yeah.
That's one we could touch on. But she manages to release her father and Gino, and they have to, you know, rough up a few guards on the way out. They
it's funny how he...
A fight.
Well, I don't know if you'd call it that. I mean, Francesca's father just takes one of the guards and he picks him up, slams him one, two, and he's out.
Yeah, well, you know, even with the chainmail on, I mean, it doesn't give him any protection at all.
No, I mean, you know, that's all.
I think Gino kills someone.
I wouldn't even pay that
sword.
Guard anything, though. I wouldn't give him a meal.
No, not nothing. You're going to pass out that easy?
I mean, that's kind of ridiculous if you ask me.
Caliber of Dungeon Master. So they're making their way through the underbellies of the castle, making their way up, and
they head out. They think they're
right. They think it's another guard that they can get past, but it turns out to be Prospero in disguise. All his guards come through the door.
Sneaky son of a.
They're
you
all
know.
Captured.
Yeah,
captured again, and they're going to be brought to the audience chamber to entertain the guests.
Yes. Poor Francesca.
Yeah, so they're having their dinner. Ugh. This is not quite the masquerade yet. This is dinner, and the masquerade's going to be at midnight.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's got Hazel Court on one side. He's got Francesca on the other. I mean, hey, man, he's lucky.
He's got a maid.
He is. Maid
in the shade.
With some lemonade. And I love he's wearing all the billowy kind of purpley pink kind of thing.
Velvet.
And this is the Russian roulette, I think, that you were talking about that's going to be coming up.
Yeah, brings the father and the
right, and Gino
mother.
In. And he throws several knives, like, into the table.
Yeah, he's talking to the guests at the table. Mm-hmm. And while he's doing that, he's like...
Tossing knives.
Duh,
and it's
going
to turn out how that...
five knives he throws.
Five knives. One of them has poison on it. And
kills you within 5 seconds.
Is that what he said?
Yeah.
And
so it's going to be like a Russian roulette where he's going to tell each one of them to slice their skin.
Yeah.
If it's to show who,
mm-hmm.
like he tells the father something like, do you care Excuse more me? For your daughter that you would die first or him,
mm-hmm.
you know? So the father comes up first and goes, shows that, you know,
right.
He would let them to live longer, you know, so.
Right.
And then they keep going back and forth. And
yeah, because, like, when she was given that choice at the beginning, she didn't say anything. And
mm-hmm.
then just, you know, that old woman that had the Red Death, that kind of, you know,
mm-hmm.
Put the stop on that. So, yeah, so the father, he cuts himself first. I mean, I hate when people have to cut themselves. That always gives me the willies.
It does.
It's just like, oh, even though you know it's fake. And, yeah, he's taking the knives and they're
that
all...
first cut, too, Vincent Price has got a look on his face like... You
know, yeah, really.
He's like, oh, you didn't die?
Anytime you watch somebody cutting themselves, even though it's fake, you think, man, who
could... And the guys, the nobility at the table, they're enjoying it, man. They're like, one guy's got a knife, he's cutting an apple, he's eating it, and laughing. They're just all laughing.
Oh, yeah.
Waiting for someone to die.
They're all despicable, you know, fat, rich people.
Yes.
And so, yeah, they're all taking the turns, and... It comes down to where there's just one knife left.
Yeah.
And we know that's the poison knife.
Right.
And it's the, it's her father's turn. And, you know, he takes it and he's about to lunge at Prospero. But, you know, Prospero, he knows what's going to go down.
Yeah.
He's already got his sword ready and just runs him through
right
when he makes that first lunge towards him.
Yeah.
So, you know, dad, you know, died.
Yeah.
So.
At this point, since we're talking about father and daughter stuff, Ted's little daughter, Gabriella, wanted this little yellow spider.
That's right.
In the video.
Her shirt.
Yeah. So this is just that one little spider there that she
See,
wanted
honey,
to put,
I put
in
it
the
there.
Video.
I put it there.
So it's cool that our kids like to watch. And
yeah, they actually want to get in on it. They
yeah,
want to get in on this.
We can't have them sitting here talking about the movie.
Yeah, I'm sorry, kids. You got to get your own podcast.
Wouldn't work out too well.
Right. There's not enough seat that you won't get seen. There's not enough room for them. There's enough room for them to sit on this big couch.
Enjoy daddy's talking. Anyways.
That's right.
Anyways, yeah, what comes next then?
Well,
he's always telling the soldiers, clean that mess up.
Oh, I know.
I take
know.
Those dead bodies away.
You're laying around with Hazel Court. It's awful.
My guests can't enjoy this party with these dead people laying around.
Get this out of here.
It's so funny how he's just.
I wish I was that rich. You know, get this body out of here. No, no recourse to the law or anything like that. So they just end up. He does show a little bit of mercy, and he just throws Gino out of the castle to go, you know, try his luck with the Red Death. And
yeah, luckily, yeah, I mean, he does. He does give him some.
He gives him his freedom, but yeah. I mean, Red Death is decimating the land outside, and that's what we know in the story too. That, you know, the Red Death was conquering the land.
Yeah.
And I believe he's going to run into our cloaked figure, our red cloaked
figure. He runs into him sitting against a tree.
Yep, with the tarot cards, and he gives him
a card.
And
it is very cool. The cloak is, he's just, it's all red. And his face, you can tell.
His hands are all red.
And,
you know, it's pulled down below his eyes. You can't get a good look at his face.
And he's just so coy and, like, just the tarot cards he's going through on.
It's a great touch in this movie. This one, especially as we get towards the end of the film, is a little bit different than the other Poe movies. This one, I think Roger Corman was kind of going for, you know, a lot of Edgar Allan Poe stories are psychological and subconscious, and I think he was kind of going for that with some of the weird, you know, like when all the, well, we'll get to it when it comes in there, but this one's a little bit different than the others, and maybe that's why I'm wanted to do this one first, just it's a little different.
Yeah.
And I mean, Edgar Allan Poe's still—he's a dense writer anyway. Like whenever I read him, I have to have—I won't read him on my e-reader. I have to read my book when I read Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah.
And there's a few books like that. I have to read the actual book, and I need like absolute quiet when I read him. His verbiage and everything is really dense. And you can't have any background noise. I have to have absolute quiet.
Your mind must be constantly...
Him and Lovecraft.
Diving into
Lovecraft
the
is just very wordy.
Yeah.
And you know, you just gotta have quiet. But
absolutely.
In this story... it's true.
No, it is true. No, I get you 100%. I agree.
And so he gives the symbol for Red Death, the Hooded Man... He gives Gino a card, a tarot card, and it's for mankind.
Well, he's basically telling him at this point in the movie, that telling Gino that, because this is Red Death, you know, I mean, this is a, you know...
Fatal disease.
Right, right.
No escaping it.
But he's giving, it's a different side, whereas he's giving him hope. And he, like, he's going after...
Almost like his protection, you know.
And wants to get rid of... The evil that resides in the castle, who is Prince Prospero.
So he's giving sort of.
Him so it's kind of So yeah, a strange, you know, kind of interaction.
Right, because that's exactly what he wants to do. He wants to take care of the degrading people that are inside.
And yeah, it's almost like it's trying to heal the planet or the earth of the scourge and the evil that are.
I mean, a little bit. He's responsible for death. He is death and, you know, pauper and prince alike, but, you know, maybe we can give this one person a chance, you know,
Which we'll find out at the very end, but yeah, then we get to the scene of where the,
back to the other short story that incorporates into this movie.
Yes.
Hop Toad is got, Alfredo, all dressed up like a gorilla. He in Hop Toad himself is all
pink. He's bringing it out, yeah.
And he's got his little whip and his costume. And
he's telling him. He's telling him. Alfredo puts the gorilla outfit on, and he's telling him, move your arms like this, which is like an ape
just
would do.
Just having fun with him.
Yeah, knowing in the back of his head that I'm going to do you know what to him. And and he's got the whip going, and he's just, you know, very sinister, too, that little guy.
Right.
Man,
and there's a little bit of a scene earlier, before this, where he's in a chamber talking to, and that's where we find out that this little girl is not a little girl, that Esmeralda. But, you know, and he says, you know, I'm going to take care of it, and we're going to get out of here.
Yeah, and this is where she's talking into her grown-up woman voice.
And it's weird, because...
Which they dubbed it over her voice, so it looks weird, too.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, but it's a grown woman's voice. And that's how it is in the story as well.
Yeah.
And then there's a scene outside the castle. Gino runs into what's left of his village. They've got a cart with, sick people, and there's just a few of them left. And they're hoping to go to the castle and just beg forgiveness. You know, let us in.
Yes.
Let the last few of us in. And that's the plan. I mean, Gino's all against that, and it's not going to end up.
Yeah, he says, you're not going to... But they said, all we have is death back there. And he goes, well, all you're going to have here is the same kind of evil and torture.
Right.
And, you know, it's, you know, no better,
better to die out there than to grovel to him.
Right.
And then we get another scene with Juliana at the altar again, and she gets kind of like this vision where she's...
like she's popped LSD or something. She goes...
and this is what
like
I was kind of
like
getting at, the subconscious, the dreamlike quality in a lot of Poe's writing.
Right.
They don't really address that in any of his other... because a lot of Poe's stories are told like from a first-person point of view, and you don't get into that head there, but...
they try to a little bit here.
Yeah, and that's kind of what's different about this one as opposed to all the others. And there's a couple of scenes like this. And it's all bluey, green, and misty.
Yeah.
And she's moving kind of in slow motion through the mist. And then she's lying on an altar. And then there's like all kinds of different...
people.
Yeah, like Egyptians, looks like Indians. All about to sacrifice her. It's like she gets sacrificed by all these different shamans and holy men. And so when she comes out of this trance...
it's almost like that's what she wants.
She feels like she has survived the sacrifice.
Yeah.
And so now I am, you know, the bride of Satan.
Yeah.
And it's just real. I mean, you know, Roger Corman, you know, it's got that twisty, distorted look to it. It's just really cool. And when she wakes up, she's in the altar and she just has the revelation that, you know, I am...
The bride.
I've survived the sacrifice. And then I like when she comes into the
big
chamber.
Yeah.
It's like you're looking at her from behind the pendulum clock.
Yes.
It just goes right in front of the screen like that. And I think that's like a cool shot. Yeah. And
right after that.
Yeah, the Falcon just out of nowhere just dive bombs on her, rips her to shreds. She's
her neck
in blood
and everything.
And there goes, you know, my babe. And
there's all the nobility comes.
Yeah, the masquerade now starts. And Prospo, he comes down there and.
Again, he says, take this away.
We can't have revelry with this corpse here. Take her away.
What does he say? He's like, she's better off, kind of.
You know, she's with Satan now.
Yeah, so she's in a better place. She's with Satan now.
I mean,
so
he's just...
no care. He doesn't care.
Wow.
However long this took to build this.
Even the people that come to the party, like one lady screams, everybody else...
And he's like, get this out, clean it up. Let's...
clean this body up.
The masquerade will be starting soon.
Yeah, masquerade, let's go.
Masquerade.
And this is where the remaining villagers do come up to the wall.
Yep.
And what's the one soldier at the top of the wall says, go get Prince Prospero. He might want to have some fun with this.
Yeah, he's like, you might actually enjoy this.
yeah.
I mean, yeah, because it's a couple of families. Like, one of them's got a little girl left. And Gino's still trying to convince him, you know, I've been inside here. You do not want to be inside this.
Yeah,
castle.
He wanted to at least take the girl with him, you know.
Right. And it ends up being, you know, the daughter of one of the other villagers. He's not going to, you know, let them. And I understand that, but, you know, Prospero comes up there and absolutely not. They're not coming in there.
Nope.
And he just orders them to open fire, you know, crossbow up.
Take care of them
all. But he even says, spare the girl.
Spare the girl.
And again, because she's innocent and... he just wants to corrupt innocent. Let her watch her father and all these other villagers be murdered and let that scar her. I mean, it's sick.
Yes.
It's sick, but that's the kind of character he played in this movie.
Yes, very, very disgusting.
Vincent, how could you?
Churns my stomach.
But I mean, anybody, you know, he's just so silky about it. It's like you love to watch him do it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's what was great
the
about
role
Vincent
was,
Price.
Yeah, his role in this movie is great.
And Vincent Price did lots of movies, and I'll always watch them, but these Edgar Allan Poe ones are probably the ones that I remember the most as a child, the ones that I like the most. Because several of them, he plays characters that go slightly insane, and he does that so well. And he does evil so well. I mean, there's great movies like The Fly, but he's not remotely scary in The Fly.
This is what Vincent Price is known for.
Right. Or the Honorable Dr. Fibes.
Right.
You know, even without being able to talk, you know, you just hear his voice when he puts his little device in. So great. Those are the ones that I really like.
Yeah.
I think one of his first horror movies was, House of Wax. Which is a little tame, but, I mean...
oh, I loved it, though. Yeah, that's typical, old school, black, white, you know. Yeah,
right.
So,
well, that one was colored. It was 3D, which I would have loved to have seen it.
House of Wax was colored?
Yeah, the very original one had like Fay Wray in it, Mystery of the Wax Museum, okay. Which that's a remake of, I believe. Okay. That's black and white, but House of Wax was color. Now, he did one in 3D as well that was black and white, Mad Magician. Okay. I don't know if that's what you're thinking of, but... And that's anyways, good. I'll always watch, you know, Vincent, House on Haunted Hill, Last Man on Earth. Those are probably my favorite ones.
Yeah. House on Haunted Hill is a... I love that
one. We got to do that one. That one was so fun.
Oh, yeah.
Such a fun movie.
Yeah.
But back to Mask of the Red Death, Gino, he still wants to get his lady out of there.
Well, the masquerade party starts.
Masquerade's going on.
And, you know, Francesca comes out and
Vincent Price is like a chic.
He's like a chic. Yeah. I was going to say the same thing in a bit, his black... Rogue outfit,
robes and gold bands.
Yeah,
and,
so I mean, he's got some costume.
I don't believe is really like dressed up really as anything.
Not really. I mean, she looks nice.
She's got a fancy dress on and this little mask on, I think.
Not a mask, but some kind of, you know how they put, almost like the sheiks would do, like, you know, mm-hmm. where it would cover just the like nose and mouth part.
Okay.
But it's sheer, you can see through it and stuff. So.
And Gino, he says he's gonna scale the wall of the castle. He just finds a log. And ties
this scene is kind of funny how
he gives it a throw first try, and he climbs up there.
It's like an anchor shape,
sort of, yeah,
branch type.
He found an anchor shaped branch,
and he did tie that grapevine thing.
Right.
Whatever.
But you know,
when you
need those things, they're always just laying around.
They are. You know, I bet if I went in the backyard right now, I'd probably find something.
If you needed one
to get on top of the house with,
if we had to scale this house right now, go in the backyard, we'd find it easy because that's how it always is. They're just laying there.
Anyways,
this reminds me. You remember Boondock Saints when he gets the rope, and the one brother asks him why he's getting the rope. He's like, Charlie Bronson always has a rope in the movies, and he always uses it.
Right! Oh, that's right. Boondock Saints, another awesome two movies, right? Yeah.
I just love the first one. Second one wasn't as good for me, but...
Right, no. First
not
one,
bad, just not as good.
First one, great.
But, yeah, and he always uses it.
And he always
that's
uses
the thing,
it.
Rope. You always need rope.
Climb up a wall.
And when he gets up the...
Tie up a man.
And fortunately, the castle wall isn't even that high. The turrets aren't even...
Yeah, he's just...
And he gets up there, and the robed death figure is up there again. Yes. And, you know, even instructs him that...
he tells him basically to stay there.
Yeah, stay here. I'm going to take care of it.
He says, I'll send Francesca out when it's time.
Right. And this is where it's going to
thank you very much, Red Death.
Yeah, it's what could you tell me that before I scaled the wall?
You could have told me this down there before I put that whole thing
together.
Yeah, how about
when I got that card from you? Couldn't you just tell me? Come on, man.
You could have told him, stay here, stay put. But yeah, whatever. But anyways,
it's the movie. After that, they go right back to
they're partying down.
Alfredo's coming down with the gorilla costume. Hop Toad has got his little whipping it, and everyone's loving it. And he gets he's got this plan. Everyone just lets him do it too.
Because Alfredo's a terrible guy too. So I actually love this scene.
But he manages to get in a playful way, gets Alfredo down on the ground, ties him up.
He's lowering the big old candelabra chandelier type thing or whatever
and ties
from the
him
ceiling.
To it.
Ties him to it
because he's got that mask on. He can't even really see what's going on.
Yes.
And Hop Toad just jumps up there and
they shoot the Prince Prospero going. Look at Hop Toad having fun with Alfredo.
He knows. I mean, Prospero, you got no doubt. He knows what's going on.
Yeah.
He's loving it. And now we realize for sure, this is what's going down. And Hop Toad takes the brandy or whatever it is and douses it all over him.
I forget what he says, but he's
it doesn't matter. Yeah. He just sets him afire.
Sets him on fire.
And in the short story of Hop Frog, he had all the guests dressed as orangutans, and Hop Frog does this to all of the nobility. He sets them all on fire.
Okay.
And, with their costume, just goes up like that.
Yeah.
And they're all in flames. So that's how the story differs. But I like how the writers took that little bit of a story.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
That, they made it all make sense.
It shows you that they really took to heart everything that the movie's about.
And they looked at Edgar Allan Poe. And then, they took care. I mean, they realized that these were short stories and they had to flesh them out to an hour and a half long film.
Yeah.
And I think they did a fantastic job, especially the ones that Richard Matheson wrote on.
Mm-hmm.
But all of them are great. And from what I understand, this script needed a couple of rewrites.
This
was actually supposed to be, I think, the second one that they were going to do. He wanted to do Mask of the Red Death second, but he just Roger Corman just didn't get a script that he really liked until, you know, they started incorporating some of these other things, and that's what made it kind of cool. Huh. So it actually ended up, instead of being the second one, it ended up being the second to last one that they did, the seventh out of eight that they did. So yeah, Prospero, he even offers to, like, give the dwarf gold, you know.
Find him,
give him some gold. And
well, first he says, okay, once again, clean this out of here. We have to have our guests, you know. And then he says, and also give Hop Toad 5 gold coins when you see him for his
But I don't think we ever see Hop Toad again. His plan was to get Esmeralda and get out.
Yeah.
You know, he had no idea what was going to be happening to him. But
right.
Yeah, we see a little bit of debauchery going on. You know, people making out a little bit. And
nothing,
you know,
too bad.
You know, belly dancing and stuff like that. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm okay with a little belly dancing in the purple room. And it's all going through chamber after chamber. But then what happens is, out of the corner of their eye, they see this red figure flowing by.
Yeah, he goes, yeah, I forbid anybody to wear red here.
So he's going to chase him down, and they keep seeing him and seeing him, and he ends up cornering him
in
the black room.
Yeah.
And the figure looks a little bit different in that he's got a mask.
Yeah, it's kind of like what are those called?
Yeah, it almost looks like a curtain with the, you know, and the little fuzzy things that hang down.
Yeah.
So I don't really like the effect of it in the movie, because when he talks, it kind of flails out.
Yeah, that's kind of...
I wish he could have done something about that. Because if he's deaf, he doesn't have
breath.
He's not a living person.
Right. I think they didn't want to show his face because of the next part of the scene.
Right.
But,
yeah,
to have that there is kind of... They could have had a...
Right.
Just a plain face and just maybe took it off or something.
Yeah,
that's the only part
that I don't really care for. But it's so minor.
Don't mess up the movie.
So he's questioning him. You know, he thinks it's one of his guests. Oh, it's, you know, you from wherever. And then it's, you know, it's not. And then he starts to think that this is an emissary, you know, the representative of Satan coming to, you know, test him to see how, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, he even takes Francesca because he's got her with him. He keeps her with him at all times. You know,
oh, yeah.
Look what I've done to this child. You know, I've corrupted this child for you, and I've done all of this for you. And, you know, Death is just teasing him the whole time, you know.
Right.
You know, ends up telling him, you know, once he realizes he's not an emissary of the devil, you know, just like every man creates his own God, every man creates his own heaven and his own hell.
Right.
And, you know, we're going to start to find out what, you know, Prospero's idea of hell is. Prospero's idea of hell is the Red Death. And, you know, we're coming towards the end of the film where, you know, we're going to realize, like, symbolically, Death has brought, this red cloaked figure has brought the Red Death to the inside of the castle. And when we get outside the chambers, all the guests
start bleeding.
They're all bloody red,
falling to the ground and dying.
They're dancing and swaying, and it's real surreal, like,
yeah, because they're all just, you see all that red
and flashing colors going.
Yes.
and they all just start slipping down.
Yes.
and eventually when we unmask the red cloaked figure, it's actually Prospero's face, all bloody red, and all the other dancing, you know, the nobility that are bleeding, they all swarm onto Prospero. And then when we do see him, who has now had the Red Death, it's just oozing, bleeding from his face. And Francesca, you know, is able to escape the castle unfazed by the Red Death, as promised.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get towards the end of the film.
The very end, which is a very cool part of the film.
One of my favorite parts of the whole film.
Yeah, Red Death sitting there talking to that girl.
The girl that got to survive, and he's playing the tarot cards with her. And then a black cloaked figure, looks just like him, comes up.
Yes.
Obviously representative of the Black Death. And then, you know, there's a gold-colored figure. There's
all different colors of robes start coming in.
Some of them, I think, are associated with real diseases. For instance, there's a white-cloaked figure. And they're all talking about, you know, how many deaths that they've caused.
Right.
The white one, I believe, is related to tuberculosis.
The yellow.
Yellow fever. So the yellow death, they used to call that. And I believe they've called tuberculosis the white death.
Yeah.
And I think there's even a blue one, which I believe is either cholera or, you know, something like that. So I tried to look up a few of them.
No, you're right. Yeah, that's it.
There was a couple I couldn't find. Like, there's a gold-colored one.
But they all come,
a violet-colored one. I couldn't find, like, what those were for. But I like to think that those are probably representative of other deaths.
Yeah.
You know, because I try to think, why are they all different colors? They must represent, you know, Red Death, right, or Black Death. I mean, we all know Black Death, bubonic plague, and stuff like that. So I kind of like to think that maybe that's what they're going
without
for.
Without a doubt, yeah. I mean, why would there be that many? And they all, like you said, they said how many deaths, I caused this many deaths. And stuff like that. So,
and
he explains to him, how many people are left?
Right, just six. He's like, I've left six. An old man in the village, the little girl, the two lovers, and the dwarf and the little girl. Or the small Esmeralda. Just six
people.
Right. And I love when they're all walking away.
Oh yeah, that's
through
my
through the mist. Yeah.
After that and everything's done in the movies and the credits and stuff, they're all in line.
Right.
Colored robes just walking through the
to all go their
dark,
ways and
foggy forest.
Death and pestilence to the world.
Yes.
And then we get the little quote, if I remember from the end of Edgar Allan Poe's story, "In darkness and decay, and the Red Death held illimitable dominion over all," and that's the last sentence of the story.
So awesome! And that was awesome.
So you had never seen
it
before, right?
I've never seen that before, and it was great.
This was one that I don't remember catching on TV a lot. I think I caught it on video, and I don't have any memory of watching this particular one on television growing up. I don't know. They probably didn't show this one very much.
Probably not. It's probably satanic.
And the 80s, when I grew up, there was all that, satanic panic and stuff like that. That was when it was coming into,
They thought they were vogue. Yeah.
So, a really cool, Vincent Price, Roger Corman, Edgar Allan Poe movie. Yeah. There's seven more of the Edgar Allan Poe movies. I'd love to eventually do them all.
Shame we can't get
this guy into him,
shame we can't get two more movies, but once a week you guys are going to get something from us. So,
and even if it's a holiday, we do it Mondays.
Exactly.
So
hopefully, guys like this podcast. Yeah, I mean,
this is and just we try to announce the movies early, so watch the movies, and then that way you understand it a little better when you get to, or if it's a movie you've seen.
Yeah.
That's why we try to announce it ahead of time and give you guys a chance to try to get your hands on the movie and watch it.
So you got your view, and you can check out our view
right,
and see what we think,
Right.
So,
so we'll let you know soon what we're going to do next week.
Yep.
And websites we got.
Yeah, keep subscribing. I mean, try to subscribe to YouTube especially. Of course, there's our website, www.thelittlemonstersmoviepodcast.com. Simple. Everything's on there, the links and stuff. So, hey, check it all out because it's all on there. There you can get us on Twitter, and I update every day.
Put a lot of work into this stuff.
I update every day on all the sites. Google Plus, you can find us on there. So, I should put this out at the beginning, but whatever. We're having fun.
Absolutely.
We're getting quite a big audience spreading out there, so it's cool. It's cool.
Join in.
Yeah. So and check out our little tribute to Christopher Lee.
Yes, we recorded that earlier today.
Right before. It's just about a 10-minute type thing. And rest in peace,
Christopher
Lee.
I didn't feel right
Lee,
doing
but,
that in a podcast. I wanted to do something separate.
Separate, yeah.
I think
so,
we both felt that way.
Right.
So
check that out, and then we'll post what we're doing next week, and hope you guys liked it. Until next time.
Until next time.
Later, bud.